we want to talk about at the top.
Very important.
my God.
When I tell you, and everyone will know immediately what we're talking about without us even having begun to talk about it, because it's everywhere. Like, yes. Every single person I talk to is like, oh my God, have you heard about the Army Hammer DMs? I spent so long on Twitter reading every single one of them.
Did you guys know about it before I sent you that link, that comment?
Oh, no. About his DMs? No. Yeah. I mean, I knew.
We've talked about his proclivities.
Correct.
For, like, being into kind of the BDSM culture, which I think, too, we're big, don't yuck people's yum. Right?
Yes, absolutely. Like, and from what I read, I'm actually really fucking upset because this thing that he's doing is not a kink, because to do kink responsibly, like, there has to be aftercare, there has to be consent, there has to be safe words. Like, this thing that he's doing is about manipulation, gaslighting, and control and abuse. It's flat out abuse. So I don't feel bad, like, shitting on him right now, because I feel like he's a piece of shit, and I'll put it out there. That's not the responsible way to practice kink. So,
and can I also say, Army Hammer, overrated. Would have said it before this. Like, he is the type of good-looking guy that is so forgettable, and mm-hmm. I actually don't even think he's that good-looking. Like, I feel like Army Hammer is basic good-looking guy from your high school. Like, he's probably
right.
The hottest guy you went to high school with. But that's not saying, like, that he's super, super special or very interesting in any way. Like, he's very bland. Someone in our Facebook group, because I'm temporarily back on Facebook, I don't want to talk about it, but someone in our Facebook group did say that. They were like, he's so forgettable. Like, he has one of those, like, generic attractive guy faces that's very forgettable. Overrated
Twitter,
anyway.
Twitter memes are fire. Someone posted, they were like, I would have known about this had you not said anything, because look at his cold, dead white boy eye.
They're so dead. I think that maybe is part of it. It's like, there's nothing interesting going on in his face. Mm-hmm. Like, there's nothing that pulls me in or draws me in about him. Like, I don't look at him and think, like, oh man, I want to dive into the depths of whatever that is, you know, because there's nothing there. Apparently there's something there, because
I think the comment that disturbed me the most was when he got turned on by "don't fuck with cats."
I don't know,
tell me everything about this. I couldn't even fucking watch that movie, it's so fucked up.
So "Don't Fuck with Cats" is I think it's on Netflix, and it's about Luca Magnotta, who's a piece of trash, tortured cats, and eventually ended up murdering people for fame online. And so freaking Army Hammer's texting one of his kittens, and he's talking about "Don't Fuck with Cats." And he's like, yeah, it's pretty messed up, but I have to say, by the third episode, I was getting pretty turned on.
No.
Also, I mean, we just jumped right over that. But the fact that he calls all of his ladies kittens is so gross to me. I found that to be weird.
It's such a... like, I'm not going to remember your name, so I'm just going to call you all kittens.
Yep.
Yes, I mean, exactly. One woman even said that, where she was like, he was texting me saying that he needed me and, like, wanted me to meet him somewhere, but he had the wrong girl, like, because he calls them all kittens. So he was like, he had the wrong kitten. So she, like, traveled and got, like, stood up.
Yep. Yep.
Because he thought he was talking to somebody else. Like, it's so. And let me tell you, trigger warning if you're going to go read those messages, because they are graphic and they are disgusting and incredibly disturbing. So just a warning, if you want to seek those out and read those, you can find sources online. But all of the mainstream sources, like, you know, E or whatever, or People, they're not going to show you the worst stuff, because the worst stuff is so bad.
It's intense. It's intense. And I multi-platform dug, like, deep dive into it. I was like Twitter, Instagram. Now I'm Googling, and
there's Reddit.
Yeah, Reddit.
Ooh, so, Reddit, the source of all good and evil. I know.
So, I mean, that's why I was just saying there are people that are, you know, saying that the point of all this, like the shockingness of this kink, isn't what we should be focused on. It's, as we're digging in further, the abuse of a lot of really young women, 20, 22 years old, who he's grooming and manipulating into participating into something that they're not comfortable with. They don't feel comfortable really speaking up for themselves. It to me, just makes my skin crawl. It makes me, when I look at him now, it makes me feel icky.
Yeah, I mean, and you can see it in the text messages, or the DMs, like a lot of that classic abuser language and behavior, mm-hmm. that's very designed to manipulate them into thinking that they're special, and that they're willing to do these things that they otherwise wouldn't be willing to do, because they're convinced that he loves them and that they're super special and wonderful. But he's talking to like half a dozen girls at the same time, you know, and all while he was married as well. And I feel bad for her, because she, or people, sources close to her, which who knows how reliable that is, you know, she feels totally blindsided. She's like, I knew he was an adulterer and, like, you know, not a good husband, but I didn't know all of this stuff. And he's, of course, denying it, but it's coming from so many sources at this point that I'm like, that's a lot of Photoshop work from a lot of different people if these aren't real. So
yeah oh, blah.
icky. But you know what else is in celebrity news right now that we should discuss, because I saw it and I was like, that's interesting. So Jason Sudeikis and Olivia Wilde broke up, and now she's like gallivanting around with Harry Styles, and I'm like, wait, what an interesting celebrity couple.
Okay, so but wait, I had said something to this about Chris, or something about this to Chris, and I was like, wait, when did they break up? And he was like, oh, they've been broken up for a while. And then I just heard, I was like, apparently they hadn't been.
I didn't think
apparently
so.
They
yeah,
hadn't been broken up, and she's just like, I guess. I don't know. And then somebody was saying that he was, he made a statement kind of about, like, you know, I hope we can come back together. Like,
ooh.
Yeah, he seems like actually heartbroken, because they'd been together. Ugh. I think they were engaged, but they weren't married. And they'd been together for like a decade or something. Like, they'd been together for like a really long time. And I think it was kind of sudden-ish for him. It was like she met Harry Styles, was like, dude, this dude over here, and then was like, hey, Jason, we're gonna have to.
That's kind of like the Megan Fox thing with Brian Austin Green, when she met Machine Gun Kelly and she was like, deuces. Like,
I mean,
you know
what?
That is such a topic that I don't think we've ever discussed before. And I have friends like this growing up who would stay in relationships until they found the other person, regardless, like, happy or not, whatever. Like, they just didn't want to be alone. Like,
relationship hoppers. Yeah,
exactly. Uh-huh. And I don't think that we've really, like, done a deep dive on that, which is that I really think that there is this, like, group of people, girls and guys.
Yes.
Who just don't want to be alone.
They always have to have that safety net.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, so they'll stick with somebody who they don't even like until they find the next one. And then it feels so abrupt for the person that they left, because it's like, you didn't know that they were gone all this time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Or they were looking, they had one foot out the door all of this time. And like, I get it from the perspective of like, being alone is scary, like trying to figure out how to operate by yourself, especially if you've been in relationships like all of your adult life, like the idea of trying to like figure that shit out on your own is scary, but it is very unfair to the other person.
Oh, it's extremely unfair. And it's unfair to the person that you hop into it with.
Mm-hmm.
But mostly it's unfair to yourself. Being alone is scary, but it's also fucking incredible. When you're mm-hmm. able to cobble together a life on your own, when you can pay all your bills and you can cook a meal for yourself and take care of your dogs or what have you, the amount of, I can't describe the feeling. I just remember it was, you know, it's terrifying, it's sad at first, but there was this period where it was overwhelming how proud and strong I felt mm-hmm. too.
It's underrated, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, it's just an underrated thing to if you've never experienced fully being alone, like there's a pride and personal pride that you it can't be explained, you know, like you have to experience it.
And you get to know yourself like you would not believe. Dude, I am a weird motherfucker and I love that about me. But discovering who you are on your own is, I think, imperative to then going into your next relationship, being able to have a solid foundation of self, which is mm-hmm. something that I never had until my divorce. I had never really lived on my own. I don't had family, roommates, boyfriends, one after another kind of thing. And it just, it wasn't really until I had that time to myself that really figured out who the fuck I was, what the fuck I wanted out of life. I actually almost dated somebody that was going to break up. They were going to leave a relationship to be in a relationship with me. I said, I put my foot down. I fucking hate safety netters. It bothers me. I'm like, I'm nobody's safety net, you know?
Well, and also it makes you feel like you're indebted to them. Like you have this commitment. Like if someone left a relationship to be with you, mm-hmm. I feel like you would try harder to make it work or make it fit, even if it didn't, just because you're like, this person blew up their life for me. And now I feel like I owe them something, you know?
Obligatory.
And like, I wouldn't want to get involved with something like that. Like
you hit the nail on the head. That's exactly right. And I hate it when people like have those expectations or you feel obligated or indebted to somebody. That's not my jam at all. So yeah.
Ugh. I mean, and who knows if that's what's happening with Olivia Wilde and Harry Styles. Maybe Harry Styles is just that charming. Like, you know, I could totally see that. Like, he's super charismatic and charming. And she, I actually, I was at LAX waiting to get picked up a couple of years ago. And this guy walked up to me and was like, hey, can you take a picture for me? And I was like, yeah, sure. And it was Olivia Wilde was there and he wanted a picture with Olivia Wilde. And so I took their picture for them at the airport. And she is stunning. Like she is disarmingly beautiful in real life. So maybe it's just the case of like two incredibly beautiful people finding each other. And Jason Sudeikis is freaking adorable.
Yeah.
Like, I love him too, but I mean, Harry Styles is Harry Styles. Like, what are you going to do?
What are you going to do? It's Harry Styles, yeah.
They have a pretty considerable age difference, though, I think, because she's older than me, and Harry Styles, I think, is a little bit, like, a year or two younger than me. So, interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, he is. They have to be. I'm interested now to see what the age difference is, because
looking.
I think you're right. I feel like it's got to be, like, I feel like she's like 8 to 10 years older than him, possibly.
Hey, you know.
I mean, cheers.
Well, here's the other thing. I would guess in my head, and total speculation here, mid-30s is when women hit their sexual peak.
Mm-hmm.
It is intense. I often feel like a 18-year-old boy where I'm just like, it's intense. I had never had that kind of sexuality before until I hit my 30s. Now, when you're dating like an older man, tends to wane. So maybe, you know, if you wanted actually, to get some strange.
It makes dating- more sense for older women to date younger men than the other way around, just totally. From a biology standpoint. But yeah, she is 36 and he's 26. So there is a 10-year age gap. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Well, I can tell you, I can guess, total speculation, that she getting dick down.
Oh, yes. 100%. 100. And you know what? I bet Harry Styles is good at it. So,
He looks like he'd be good at
it. He does. I'd be disappointed if he wasn't, because he does give off that vibe that I'm like, oh, you can pull off wearing, you know, a blouse and grandma's pearls like I've never seen. So, right. I mean, a man with that kind of confidence, I'm like, he's bringing that to the bedroom 100%.
He's got that David Bowie androgyny. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Which hot. Is so fucking sexy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, poor definitely. Jason Sudeikis.
I know. He seems lovely. He does.
He seems lovely. Like, oh my God, he seems so sweet.
Like, when I, if I was to fuck, marry, kill the two of them, like, I'm going to fuck Harry Styles, but I'm going to marry Jason Sudeikis, right?
Jason Sudeikis is stability.
Yeah.
He's sweet. Yeah. He's fun. You know, you'd have a good time.
He's down to earth for sure. Oh. Like, he's the type who's going to wear sneakers on the red carpet. Like, that's Jason Sudeikis, you know?
Yeah.
He's just chill.
And you're going to be able to go in public with him and not always feel like you're have to, like, I don't know. Like, I would have so much anxiety dating a Harry Styles. Like, I could never be good enough.
Yeah, I feel like you have to look like Olivia Wilde, because it's just, right. like, there are people coming at him all the time, which Jason Sudeikis, I mean, adorable, but he's not having ladies like throw them and gentlemen throw themselves at him the way that Harry Styles
is, not a thirst trap. No. Oh my God.
I don't want to date a thirst trap.
Yeah, me either. It's way too much pressure. But how did we gloss over the fact that the only compliment I want to receive now in life is being called the Michael Phelps of anything? Did you guys miss that too?
Yeah, I don't know what you're talking
about. One of Army Hammer's DMs where he's calling one of his main kittens the Michael Phelps of fucking.
And that's right. Like, that's right. Oh my God. Okay. Also, can we also say, I know that this is not at all the point, and there are so many worse things to point out about Army Hammer's DMs that I feel like we've already touched on, but he does something that grates on my nerves more than anything, which is that he is a consecutive texter.
Oh,
which is like, he will text a sentence and then in a separate text another sentence and then a paragraph and then another sentence. And I'm like, motherfucker, you could get your thought out in one or two texts. I don't understand. Because he's blowing up your phone. Like, if he's texting you, it's like da-ding, 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 da-ding. And I'm like, I notice it's walls of texts. And like,
you're ruining my solitaire game.
Oh, yeah. Right? I'm like, I'm trying to play Best Fiends. If you, please. I'm busy.
Exactly. No. And you know, I feel like if people are like that over text, that means they're probably like that in real life, too. You're dominating the conversation, even virtually. It's annoying. I don't like it.
I don't like it either. Oh, God.
Good times.
The Michael Phelps of fucking.
Oh, that's God.
Gold medal.
I do want to be told that.
I mean, I would appreciate it, actually, because I'm like, yeah, like several gold medals.
Right. Yeah.
And you make it look easy. So that's great. Well, we have a lot of new patrons this week that I want to give a shout out to. So let's get started. I want to give a shout out to Mitchell O'Neill. I actually don't know if this is Mitchell or Michelle. So it could be either. Let us know. Please message us on Patreon. As we know on this podcast, I have butchered many a name and would be happy to correct it in the next episode. But we would love to thank you for joining us on Patreon. Also, Erica Strabo and Kelsey Capehart and Darian Sean. And also, Brina, welcome to Patreon. Your support means so, so much to us. We are so grateful to have you always and forever. And if there's anything that we can do that you want to see on our Patreon, please reach out and let us know. We had lots of plans for content when we thought that this was coming to a close and we would be able to be together in person. But of course, that is not the case at the moment. So we're having to kind of recalibrate what we want to do for Patreon. But if you have ideas, we are always open to accept those.
Yeah,
definitely.
We're in the middle of it. So we're kind of locked down for the foreseeable future. But seeing the week that we had with so much support and love, we really appreciate it. We got a couple reviews too. Which thank you so much if you've taken the time to go on iTunes and rate and review. We really appreciate it. And if you need to know who we are, because we didn't do it last week, this is my worst date. I'm Christina.
I'm Keegan.
I'm Cassie. And we are 100% so grateful for everybody who is out there supporting, listening, sharing, telling friends, all of that. It means a whole lot to us. The one thing I want to point out is because since we've been separate, since we've all been, you know, quarantining and in our own bubbles, as it were, I have been responsible for getting out Patreon like gifts, so like pens and stickers and all those things. So for if any reason anyone hasn't gotten anything, everything is up to date except for the brand new people. But if anybody feels like they should have gotten something but didn't get it, please just reach out to me. You can DM us, you can email us, you can message us on Patreon or on Patreon. But yeah, It's coming your way if it hasn't gotten to you yet, but you feel like you should have gotten it by now. Please just message me. You know, times are weird. So
totally. Well, who should we fuck, marry, kill this week?
I have a really good idea.
Awesome.
Okay. So I have been I have been binge watching ER. Okay.
Okay.
So I forgot. I was just like, I needed something to fall asleep to the other day. And I was like, I just want to put something on that I don't really care about. I forgot how fucking good ER is and stayed up till 3 o'clock in the fucking morning watching ER because it's so fucking good. I forgot. And so I've never really been into medical TV drama. And I kind of feel like it's because ER spoiled me. And I feel like I've never found like a show that really hits that note. Like I don't know, like I loved House, so to be fair, and I feel like we've done Doctors before, mm-hmm. but have never I don't know that have we ever done Nurses.
I don't think so.
I well, have to say I've never watched a single episode of ER.
Me neither. I was gonna say that as well. I've never seen kidding. ER. I've
Dude,
never seen
when
Grey's
did
Anatomy
it start or come out
94. I was like,
guess
kid.
What?
I don't
was
know.
Third grade then.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but I mean, it was on
Keegan,
for 15 seasons, girl.
I was four.
Girl, it was on for 15 seasons.
But
it was like
on for a long time.
You guys and, have heard of Friends, right?
And it and it played on TV, like it was like rerun central when I was growing up, so I may have caught like bits and pieces of episodes, but you know, I have to say, as far as like hospital dramas or medical dramas go, I never really watched anything except for House. But if we're doing Nurses, I did watch all of Nurse Jackie. So
yes, Nurse Wild. Jackie was great.
So I can pick Nurse Jackie for mine, which is a mess of a human being. So
gosh, and I watched all of Scrubs, so I would pick Carla.
Okay, yes. Okay,
I don't know who that is. I never watched Scrubs.
Oh, she's the curly haired nurse who is married to Turk, so she's one of the main characters. Sassy, smart Latina nurse, head nurse.
I am going to pick Juliana Margulies' character then.
Okay.
Which is Carol Hathaway.
Okay.
I always thought she was a doctor. Again, because I've never seen ER, and they used her a lot in promotional materials.
It's Michael Crichton, and it is fucking spectacular.
Wait, Michael Crichton?
Yes.
Like the guy who wrote Jurassic Park?
Yes.
Hmm. Wow.
Interesting. Yes. Okay.
It's so fucking well written. I forgot. Like, I literally was like, I couldn't remember it because, like you said, it was 90s. I didn't remember enough of it. I remembered enjoying it, but I didn't remember enough of it by a mile to know, like, if I'd, you know, enjoy. I was like, I am riveted. It is so fucking good.
Okay. So, for some context, Cassie, give us, like, a brief, like, overview of her character so that we can make an informed decision.
Mm-hmm. I think we should do that with all of these guys because I kind of feel like I definitely don't know who Carla is. So, Nurse Hathaway is she and George Clooney's character were kind of an item. So like the first season kind of opens with them having broken up. She is she has some the first or second season, she tries to overdose herself. She tries to commit suicide. So it's very dramatic. She comes back and her character is very, has lots of levels, lots of layers.
But we like her. We're rooting for her.
Yeah, 100% we're rooting for her. She's very sweet. And the thing of it is, too, is that it's like that perfect characterization of her, like that first episode being very like, large and in charge. She knows everything. She's got the key for the box. She's the one who's like everybody goes to. She's got it all together. And to see this character who has it all together, doesn't have it all together, is it's just, she's just a really layered character and they just do a really good job. And Julianna Margulies is just beautiful.
Perfection. Anyway. Yeah. Curly haired dreams. Yeah.
Oh, for real. Mm-hmm. Most perfect curls ever. Bitch.
Well, yeah, like I said, Carla is the head nurse at the hospital. She doesn't take shit from anybody, not even the doctors. She ends up dating and getting married to Turk, who is Donald Faison. So you know how the two main characters are Donald Faison and Zach Braff. She's like the third main character in that. Like the relationship between her and Turk is, but she's just like a really ambitious, motivated, take no shit from anybody, really empathetic, big hearted.
I feel like woman. She's kind of like, I hear from a lot of nurses who work in hospitals that like they are really the ones who like run shit.
Yeah.
You know, and I feel like that's her. Like she's the one holding everything together, like keeping the ship afloat, mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Right.
Okay, so have you guys seen Nurse Jackie?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah. So Nurse Jackie, for our listeners, like, it's Edie Falco, who is incredible. Yeah. Like, her performance in this show is unbelievable, but she is an ER nurse, and again, she is, like, super smart, like, runs shit, like, they would flounder without her, but she has a massive pill addiction, so she is constantly, you know, blowing her own life up, like, all the time. Like, she's got a super hot husband and family, and you kind of, like, track her trying to stay afloat while also doing like kicking ass at her job and struggling with this addiction, and then how the hospital handles it. It's such a good show. So yeah.
The thing, when I used to have two phones, I used to have a work phone and my personal phone. And if my work phone went off, my husband, Chris, would always be like, "Your Nurse Jackie phone's going off."
Yeah. Cause yeah, she has like her secret like drug boyfriend phone. And then like her regular phone. So yeah. Okay.
I think I know what I'm going to do.
Hard. Yeah. Go for it.
I think I know what I'm going to do. I think I'm going to kill Nurse Jackie.
Yeah. She's not a great person.
Not a great person. She really isn't. Like, you want to root for her in the way like you want to root for the bad guy. It definitely gives you that like Dexter vibe of like you want to root for the bad guy a little bit.
I feel like it's kind of Breaking Bad vibes where like it's a protagonist. She is the protagonist, but also she's objectively a bad person. And it speaks to Edie Falco's amazing character work that you root for her at all, because she does 100%. Humanize this character, you know,
a character that could easily be the fucking worst person on the planet.
Yeah, for sure.
And you're right, Edie Falco is incredible. She's amazing, and I love Nurse Jackie. I thought they did a really good job with it, even though it gave me a little bit of anxiety to watch, but she is She's great, but it's going to be a no for me, dog. I am going to fuck Juliana Margulies' character just because she's smoking hot. She's got a little bit too much melancholy for my liking. Mm-hmm. And so that's why I'm going to have to marry Nurse Carla, who sounds like a fucking boss bitch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I feel like I'm all about that.
Do you know who she makes me think of now reflecting on it? She reminds me of Amy.
Oh, yeah. Our friend Amy.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. 100%. She's got that energy. Like she's a boss bitch, but she's also funny and she keeps it like light. Yeah. But she'll throw hands if she has to.
And big hearted. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think I'm going to do the same thing as you. I don't think I'm going to marry Juliana just because I feel like from your description that we're too alike. You know what I mean? That I'm just like the way that you described her and just, yeah, I need someone to balance out. I'm kind of a naturally melancholic person if left to my own devices. And I need that light, fun boss bitch energy. I feel like me and Nurse Carla would be like power couple goals.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Where we well, shit. I feel like I'm a little bit more like Nurse Carla. Maybe I should have married Juliana Margulies.
You know, I feel like you can't marry Juliana Margulies because I feel like, and again, I've never seen ER and that show went on for a very long time. So I don't know what I'm talking about. But from what I'm getting, I feel like George Clooney is always going to kind of be it for her. And so there's always going to be like a never quite measuring up situation happening. And like, I can't, that sounds exhausting to be married to somebody who's, you know what? It's like the character in Legends of the Fall where I'm like, do I want to be married to her when like she's just pining for Tristan the whole time? Like,
I loved Nurse Jackie as well. I totally get what you're saying about the anxiety watching it. I loved Breaking Bad too, but it became very difficult for me to watch those shows when people are responsible for their own downfall. It just it makes me like clench, you know?
Yeah, you're like, make one good decision.
It
That'd
was
be great.
Yeah, please do something. But yeah, that's too much. I mean, I almost thought about fucking her because
that becomes the question because clearly in 2021 I'm not making good decisions. Like I said I was going to in 2020. I was like 2021, I'm gonna make good decisions. But you know what? Maybe just fuck it and like let's just go off the rails with it. Because there are a lot of sex scenes with Nurse Jackie and she looks like good sex. You know, do you want to get wrapped up in that kind of drama? Like, no, definitely not. But will it keep things interesting?
It's a one and done for sure. But I kind of feel like when it's done, you're running out without having put your shoes on.
And you got to block. You got to block in the Uber. Yeah, you gotta immediately like it's you have fun for a good 4 to 5 hours of like date and sex. And then you're out forever. Because if you even think about answering that second text, that second you up text, now you're in it. You're in it and you're going to have a real hard time getting out of that spider's web. So, you know,
exactly.
But I actually do think, if we're talking purely about sex, the sex with Nurse Jackie is going to be better than the sex with Juliana Margulies. Like,
you're right.
The sex with Juliana Margulies is going to be kind of sad.
I feel like there's going to be a lot of... I think it's going to be slower. It's
too romantic.
It is going to be more romantic. Yes, Nurse Jackie's going to fuck you.
Yes, exactly.
You're right. God damn it. Yeah, I want to change my answer now.
Juliana Margulies is going to be playing like the Smiths while you guys have sex, which I'm like, I don't know, you know?
There's definitely a candle lit.
So you know what? I don't actually have to do this, and it's not my real life, so I'm going to be... the one who's going to blow it up. And I'm going to fuck Nurse Jackie. And no shade at all on Juliana Margulies, who's, I don't know her character's name, but I'm going to kill her nothing against her. And then, of course, yeah, I'm going to marry Carla. And we are going to have so much fun. Yeah. Like, yeah, for sure. 100%.
Yeah. Oh, that was a good one.
We married at first sight for her and I. I've literally never watched Scrubs. I'm going to have to watch Scrubs. I'm going to have to watch Scrubs, and you guys are going to have to watch ER.
Fair.
Yeah, I'm actually on the hunt for a new like
bedtime
things. We finished 30 Rock last night. Oh, like my
love 30 Rock.
Think third rewatch of it because
yeah,
it, you know, that's where
it's
we're at now.
Completely rewatchable. Yeah, yeah, it's such a rewatchable show.
Yeah, but awesome. Well, you guys want to take five and we'll come back with stories?
Yes.
Sounds good.
Okay.
And we're back. And I almost didn't make it back. Because the three of us have cats. All three of us have cats, right? Have you ever, like, I went pee during our little break. Has your cat ever jumped up on your lap and sat down while you were peeing? Because mine just did that to me. And I was like, well, what do I do?
I have stay there. No idea why, but none of our animals like the bathroom.
Huh.
Isn't that weird?
It is a little weird.
Is that where the ghost is?
I don't know. None of them go in there. So I don't know what's going on in the bathroom, but yeah, they just don't go in there. So
interesting. Okay. Well, all Christina, right. Why don't you kick us off with stories?
Okay. I got this one off of Reddit. She says, oh man, I have a few to throw in the ring, but I'm going to stick with Van Man for this thread. I was in an exploratory phase of life. My boyfriend of 3 years had cheated on me, and after I left him, I just wanted to have fun. I matched with Moonbeam, not his real name, but same level of hippie, and agreed to meet him because his profile picture showed him living out of a cool van.
No, no. Oh. Why was that a thing where she was like, actually, that's a plus.
Like, I'm exploratory happy about that. Phase of her life. Yeah.
She says, my stupid ass thought that he would be one of those adventurous van lifers, not the scumbag kind. Red flag number one.
This sounds like a 23-year-old made this decision. I'm feeling like...
100.
Like, oh, yeah, he's living out of his van. That's awesome. We met at a random bar an hour and 15 minutes away from my house because he couldn't meet any closer. Red flag number two.
What? He lives in a van. Like, right. His home is literally mobile. Like, you should be able to meet me wherever. I don't understand.
This place was local, like sticky floors with a jukebox with 10 regulars at the bar with three light beers on tap kind of local.
I miss it.
I know. We said hello and he had already ordered. When I got there, he had already had three straight whiskeys and it was 6 p.m. Red flag number three. I mean, this is pre-COVID. So yeah, like I'm like 2020. I'm like, meh, you know, we started at like 3:30 or so. That's not the worst.
No, that's true.
But pre-date, though, I feel like before a date, like you can't have three straight whiskeys before a date.
Yeah. This. We chatted about random first date things. And since I had been craving excitement, I liked his rough around the edgedness. By 7, Moonbeam had 5 whiskeys. And suggested we go for a walk.
So he had two more in an hour.
Yeah.
Cool.
I remember my ABC class that we had to take, you know, when I was waiting tables. And that's more than you're supposed to have. You have to be cut off at that point. He suggested we go for a walk. We were literally in the middle of a strip mall plaza with gas stations next to us, and I asked where we would go. He said there was a golf course that backed up behind the bar, so I agreed. Stupid, I know. So now you're going out into the woodses with a guy that lives in a van that's had 5 drinks in a couple hours.
And probably trespassing as well, because like...
Yeah.
It's a golf course. It's probably private. That. Yeah.
Yeah. Moonbeam somehow was able to bring a whiskey drink with him since he knew the bar manager.
Oh, bro. There you go.
And the entire walk, he was drunkenly rambling about his ex who broke his heart, but not before filing a restraining order against him for something he definitely did not do.
Okay.
Red.
Why would you bring this up? Oh, no. Cool.
Oh, geez. Red flag number four. We come up to trees in an area, and I made a comment about how pretty the sky looked that night. He looked back at me and gave me a really creepy smile and said, "Aw, that's just really too bad."
Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, you're about to get murdered.
I was confused and asked why. And then he said, "Because this is where I dug the hole to bury your body."
Oh, my God. What?
Oh, no.
What?
Oh, my God. Huge red flag.
Yeah.
I freaked out and started to walk really quickly away from him. And he got all confused and drunk mad, saying it was obviously just a joke. Obviously.
Okay.
Oh, my God. Why do men, like, literally not understand why that would be so scary?
Right.
Oh, my God. I didn't know him at all, and from the night had been going, and being a female taught to protect yourself at all costs, he very well could have been a murderer. You think that would have ended the night? Well, no. I was a very stupid 22-year-old.
Oh, there you
so
go. See,
oh, close. There
I freaking knew it. Like, that's early 20s energy all day. Like, oh, God.
And when we got back to the bar, I told him I had to go. He said he needed a ride because he was too drunk and started getting loud about it. Where's his van?
I was going to say, you live in a van. I don't understand.
Is your house in the parking lot? Like,
does
what?
He, right. Does the your van home. Not operate? Like, is there a boot on the van? Like, I don't understand.
The bar manager came over and basically pressured me to take him to his house by making jokes about not wanting him to drink and drive because of me. I've never been to this town.
Okay.
Yeah. I've never been to this town before, but he directs me to a house. Again, very stupid of me, but I agree to walk him inside because he's drunk and being a bit aggressive and erratic, and part of me wanted adventure, but part of me was also scared. He's
Jesus
been ranting
Christ.
About his ex and an apparent kid I hadn't known about and how they can go to hell for what they've done to him. We walk inside, and I immediately know this isn't his house. There's pictures of a family on the wall,
no.
And he's not in any of them.
No, no, no.
Oh.
He's going through the cabinets like he doesn't know where anything is. I'm trying to figure out a way to leave without him noticing or reacting when he starts crying.
Oh. Bitch, run. He's distracted. He's got tears in his eyes. Bitch, run. This is the part of the horror movie where the entire theater's like, get out.
Run. Run. Not just sniffling, but bawling his eyes out about his ex and kid. He then goes over to the pictures and starts ripping them off the walls. I was able to gather that we were at his ex's mom's no. house.
Oh,
she was the one in the photos with her family. I knew I had to bolt, so when he collapsed in the hallway crying, I shut the door to the kitchen, locked him in the other room, and myself in the kitchen. I crawled out the freaking window and ran to my car as fast as I could. I drove home thanking the universe that I was okay and promised to never get myself in a situation like that ever again. It was a great lesson and definitely helped curb my appetite for adventure.
Oh my
I mean,
God.
I also feel like maybe she should have called authorities.
Yes.
Because you don't want the mom coming home to that. Like, this guy is clearly, like, drunk and dangerous.
Yeah. Joked about murder, committing a B&E, like, lives in a van.
You guys. This story has everything.
That'll go down in history, in my worst date history, as like top level bad date.
The date committed a crime.
Wow. I don't even know if I can follow that, but here's the one I have.
Oh.
And it does not end in a B and E. I just imagine like this guy like sobbing on your floor and you come home and you're like, wait, what?
The guy that your daughter had to get a restraining order against. Ugh. Like, how scared are you?
911.
She wishes a motherfucker would.
Your mom's looking for a reason. She's like, look, I've been wanting to go off for a while now.
I've been holding this in.
She's like, I'm ready to stand my ground, motherfucker.
Oh, shit.
Oh, no.
Woo. All right. So this is I got from Reddit. Wow. I'm here. After a lot of weird, I, 30, female, was not meeting any new guys from my friend's circle, so I decided to try online dating. After a lot of weird people and lots of stories for another time, no meeting though, a guy catches my attention. We have a lot of interests in common and he seems super nice. He's a good 4 years younger, which is interesting because I usually like my men closer to 10 years older than me, but he seemed mature and fun. He would often talk about all the books he's read and we would bond over things he had learned that day. I love that learning phase of your life when you're like talking about all the listen to the smart shit that I found.
Yeah, I've been watching a lot of documentaries.
Yeah.
I actually did feel like I did a significant amount of self-improvement when I was online dating just for that reason, to be
just
interesting.
Have something to talk about.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
When
we finally meet, things go very well at first. He tells me the classic, you're not like other girls, but nothing terrible yet. Then I decide I was going to ask a hard question to know his thoughts on it. Since it's a sensitive topic, I hold close to my heart. I ask and he answers very much like I would, which I let him know. I praise him and I tell him I believe a little detail is small different. It's a small bit different. And he says, oh, I used to think like that when I didn't know better.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
That shocked me, but brushed it off, giving him my reasons. After that, he grew increasingly more smug and insulting towards me. He even tried telling me his thoughts on and mine were exactly the same, except that a small detail, which was more of a thing of opinion than a cold hard fact, and that I respected his opinion a lot. But he continued to calmly call me ignorant.
Okay,
that I should we're read fucking more
done.
Books.
I don't know that anything would trigger me faster like yeah. than this behavior. Like
we literally have the same thought on whatever this topic is. We have a very minor difference, but I'm ignorant. I don't understand. That's the most nagging bullshit ever.
It's a huge red flag because in any relationship, be it friendship, romantic, family, whatever, you are going to come into disagreements in life. And this is a huge sign of the way he deals with a difference in opinion. And it's unacceptable to call somebody ignorant or name call. It's a closed-mindedness that I wouldn't be able to deal with at all. And it's ugly. It's ugly. Yeah. If you have to resort to name-calling to defend your opinion, then your opinion isn't shit, you know?
Yeah. Well, and it feels very immature, right? Mm-hmm. Like, as much as you think you're super smart and very well-read and super smart, man, you're actually acting very immaturely to do this. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Worst part is he seemed totally calm. Frankly, sure, he was absolutely right in that I would agree at some point. I was calm too, but I was also amazed. Amazed at how badly he was treating me over such a silly detail. So after a while, I told him that while I respected the disagreement 100%, I was really angry at how he was insulting my intelligence over nothing. And he gave me this pearl.
Oh, fuck.
My... My mom always tells me I should be nicer when I debate, but I believe stupidity should not be tolerated. Besides, I am, insert random letters here, in the Myers-Briggs test. Oh. So as you can see, I cannot change my attitude.
Okay, we're done. Check, please. We're fucking done. Like, somebody who's going to react this way in this situation, like, I hate to see them about something that they actually do disagree on. Like, there's, and good luck finding somebody who's willing to put up with that. Like, okay. I am triggered.
You're going to be more triggered in a minute.
Oh my God.
Later, he tried to come to my house or set up another date, but I just told him I was not interested. A friend later told me that I should have told him, well, I am an Aquarius. The edit that she puts, I just found a conversation I had with my friend about that day, and the topic that they were debating about was feminism. We were talking, and I mentioned there have been little to no changes in society for feminism, and he disagreed. And that was the conversation that they argued about.
The back of my neck is so hot right now.
You're actually ignorant about a topic that only actually affects you, but let me tell you how I'm so much smarter than you about it.
He's like, listen, I have been listening feminism. To a lot of Jordan Peterson, and let me tell you why you're wrong. I'm like, oh, oh my dude.
Excuse me, you actually do pee through your clit. The other edit, his Myers-Briggs was INFJ. Just FYI, guys. So you guys will have that excuse if you're an INFJ as to why you must win a debate.
Okay. I hate him.
Yeah. Okay. Throw it out.
Jesus, that man is trash. Okay. My friend, we'll call her L. Her and I had a safe word. We'll say it was hot dog. A text saying, hey, can you pick up hot dogs or something along those lines basically meant, can you call me and pretend there's an emergency so I can get out of this situation without being rude?
Wonderful.
We had a lot of safe words meaning different things. Also had an unspoken rule every time we were on a date, we would let the other know and what the general plan was, especially since we were Tinder dating at the time. We had a similar thing in place for Christina. It makes sense. Elle told me she'd met a guy on Tinder and he knew a good spot to get food. We were on the phone for quite a while. She's getting ready, snapping me photos of her bright pink and white outfit. Guy comes to pick her up for their brunch date. He looks nice, albeit lots of black on. She says he needs to make a stop along the way. She says fine. He pulls up to a gravesite. And she sees some people and she's like, oh, maybe he's picking something up from someone who works here, or maybe he works here and needs to do something.
No.
She thinks, great, I'll wait in the car, especially since there's morning people nearby and she's wearing bright pink. Nope. He gets out of the car and opens up her passenger side door. Nope. She tells him something along the lines of, I don't want to draw attention to myself. She'll wait there. He says something along the lines of, oh, don't worry, you look great, they'll love you.
No. No, they won't.
Despite her pink outfit, Elle had always been on the macabre side and is also a large, as in 6 foot in heels and ripped from martial arts training, person. So she wasn't worried about safety and was curious about what the hell they were doing there at 10 a.m. on a first date. And who is, quote, they, as in they'll love you. Yeah, no, it was his mother's funeral.
Shut the fuck up.
What's that wrong with you?
Is awful. You are putting someone in such an emotionally charged. Oh my God.
Well, and for you, like, why would you even think to do that? So strange.
I am shook.
Yeah.
I'm so shook right now.
And you know what is really upsetting? This is probably the worst one because it's his mom, but this is not the only I took my date to a funeral story we've gotten on this podcast, which is really upsetting.
Yeah.
How many people have done this?
Not an advice podcast, but I feel like we could throw it out there. I'm going to be controversial and say it. Funerals, not a good first date.
Not a good date.
Yeah, you heard it here first, folks.
Oh, God. Oh, his mother's funeral.
She stood next to a group of weeping people watching as her date's mother was lowered into the ground. Needless to say, it was awkward, especially since he kept trying to hold her hand and nuzzle her for comfort. It's a first date. She waited for the service to be over, didn't want to be rude to the grieving people or the dead woman, before texting me hot dog. So I called her, pretending to be her landlord, saying her apartment flooded. Thanks, Jim Halpert. It worked this time. In the office.
Yes.
She ordered an Uber and noped out of there. I guess as she was waiting for the Uber, he kept insisting they should still get brunch and kept telling his relatives they'd been dating for a few months.
Oh, no.
She called me in the Uber and spilled the tea. Can you imagine that Uber driver? Like, he was like,
oh, my God. Oh my gosh. I don't know why there's not, do you remember like Taxi Cab Confessional? I don't know why there's not some sort of like, I need to look to see if there's like an Uber place where people unload the craziest shit they've seen in Ubers. I mean, stories.
There should be a podcast. If you're an Uber driver and you have thought about starting a podcast, that is what you should do. And you should have guests on who are also Uber drivers and you can swap stories, because I would listen to that.
Absolutely. Oh my God.
Yay. Oh,
man, that made me want to peel my skin off.
Yeah, big yikes. This guy's trying to nuzzle your neck. He's like crying into your neck. Like, oh.
Oh my God. Okay. Well. All right, you guys, I have got a crazy in love for you.
Stoked.
It's terrible. First and foremost, it's awful. Great. I do have to trigger warning for a child.
Oh, death. Oh no.
So that's not your thing. But this story's.
I don't think it's anybody's.
Yeah, I was like, who's like, that's exactly my thing.
I'm in. No, it's wild. Eric got this thing. For free Discovery Plus.
Oh, yeah.
So he installed it. They have an entire true crime section that's just like banana sandwich. It's bigger than anything I've ever seen. So I started watching this show called American Monsters.
Yes.
So this comes from that. So you may recognize it. It takes place, it's a local, it's a hometown, here in Rowland Heights outside of LA. It's about 20 miles outside of downtown LA. Like if you go east, like far east.
Yeah, east past, LA.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
So Neil Williams was 19. He was working at Subway, sandwich artisting. His coworker was like, bro, I have got the perfect chick for you. Her name was Manling, beautiful, exotic, and he just like fell in love at first sight. He told his mom about her, like she's just so easy to talk to. I'm super into her. So things progressed very quickly. She got knocked up and they ended up like 1 year later having their first son, Devin. And then shortly after that, they got married. So they got like a court ceremony and then they had a big Taiwanese wedding with all of her family. The pictures look beautiful. She looks beautiful. They look like happy family.
Wait, but just to reiterate, he's 19, right?
He's 19.
Or 20 at this point.
Yeah, 20 at this point. Okay. They're V young.
Yeah, we just had a story of a 22-year-old who went on a date with Van Guy. So if that gives you any perspective of the maturity level we're working with here.
Right.
Okay.
And Neil is just like, just this lovable dork, completely and totally into being a dad, because now he can get all the Star Wars toys that he wants. And he likes to play like lightsaber fight with his son. They have like Legos and like all those toys. He also collects samurai swords that he hangs as wall art because he's, you know, 20.
Yeah.
And we talked about that. But yeah, I mean, he's loving being a dad. He started a job at Disney, and Manling is waiting tables at Marie Callender's. So they're a young family. They're making it work. Soon after, she gets pregnant again, and they end up having Devin's little brother, Ian, in 2003. Devin was kind of like the quiet kid, was just like really sweet and very snuggly. And Ian was just the rambunctious, like mischievous madness that just wanted to be anywhere that his big brother was. So, you know, they're a young family, but they're doing it. And Neil's mother lives nearby, so she helps with watching the kids and all that stuff. So things seem pretty good. They make friends with their neighbors, and their neighbors also have kids. So there's constantly kids playing in their house or playing out in the yard and everything. It just seems everybody's like, yeah, it was really fun young family. Manling was really ambitious. She was brought up to like save money and wanted to, you know, have a house someday with a yard. Cause right now they're living in kind of like a condo apartment situation in, you know, East LA. She wanted to progress. She's young, but she's got goals. She's, you know.
Well, and that's the Los Angeles dream right there. We're like, can we have a yard or maybe a wall that's not connected to somebody else?
Yeah, exactly. It's a hard dream, especially, you know, we're talking about the 2000s. Like, things are already, like, out of reach for most people in the real estate market out here. So she, you know, she's kind of pushing Neil to try to move up in Disney, that sort of thing. And then finally she's like, you know what, like, you should actually sell insurance. That's, you can make a lot of money, which... Out of the little bit that I've told you about Neil's personality, do you think he would be good at it?
It sounds
not even a little, actually.
Like soul crushing for somebody like that. Yeah.
Right. I mean, he did not have that pushy kind of personality that you need to be sales, a successful salesperson. And so his salary was such that it was mostly commission. So if you weren't a good salesperson, you weren't making any money at all.
Well, and I wonder what he was doing at Disney, because depending on where he was working, it is very possible, having worked for studios, like several studios, it's very possible to move up. Like, it probably would have been smarter for him to stay there. If he was a Disney employee, they have really good benefits. Like, he should have just stayed and worked up. That would have made more sense than doing a complete career shift. But, I mean, I don't know. So,
yeah. Yeah, no, that's what I was thinking too. They didn't elaborate like what he was doing at Disney. It kind of got the feeling that he was working for the park.
Okay.
So yeah, I don't know.
That's quite a commute.
Yeah, from Rowland Heights to Anaheim. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but so he ends up having to borrow a lot of money from his mom. They're starting to get into a really difficult situation financially. Two young kids in LA. Mom is waiting tables at Marie Callender's, and he's struggling as an insurance salesman. It's not adding up. It's not coming together. They're really starting to struggle.
It's giving me anxiety just thinking about it.
Me too. Right?
I'm like, oh, things are falling behind. And not only that, like, Manling was like working part-time. She was just working breakfast shifts at Marie Callender's. So because Neil's job is a stay-at-home insurance salesman, he takes on the brunt of the kids as well. Manling takes on extra shifts at Marie Callender's and will come home after a long 8 hours of waiting tables. And you guys, when I tell you their house was a disaster...
Oh, no.
You're talking about anxiety. So you have financial stress, and then their house. Listen, I don't have two toddler-aged children. So that level of mess was something I have never seen. And it wasn't a hoarder mess, but it was just mess. Trash overflowing, dishes in the sink, fucking toys everywhere. Like, I mean, yeah, you're getting hot right now, Cassie. My skin is crawling. Sweating.
Well, because when I saw what, their house. You have a guy in his early 20s trying to juggle this with two toddlers by himself. Yeah. Like,
So yeah. at this point, I want to ask you guys, who's going to snap first? You have a legitimate pressure cooker here. You have two kids in their 20s with two babies, a fucking disgustingly messy apartment that no one's taking responsibility for keeping up, and you're underwater on bills. Who's going to explode first?
It could be either. I mean, I really can't even make a call because you've got
Devin,
the guy.
The oldest child.
You've got the guy working a job that he hates, which builds up resentment that he's not good at. He's probably not feeling like a very good provider because he's not good at this job. So he can't even contribute as much probably as he would like to. And then on the other hand, you've got her working her ass off all the time, these really long hours, to come home to probably what she sees as like a husband who isn't contributing as much as she would like him to, and a house that's a nightmare, and two young children. Like, both of them are
The pressure cooker is
turned up to 11,
screaming.
So neighbors start to hear them arguing more often, and they say that they see Manling in the like late hours of the night just smoking, chain smoking on the porch. So things are starting to fall apart. Manling also begins to confide in her neighbor friends that she's now become fearful of Neil. So here's where I knew something was fucking afoot. Because the next thing that happens is Manling tells Neil that she has a manager training for Marie Callender's over the weekend in Santa Barbara. Let me tell you something about having worked in the restaurant industry. Listen, there's never management training in fucking wine country.
Right, like, out of town.
For
Marie Callender's?
Over the weekend. Over the weekend, when I'm assuming Marie Callender's is probably its busiest.
Yeah. It just doesn't exist. So if your partner ever tells you that, chances are it's bullshit. Come at me if it's wrong. I don't know. Maybe that does exist. I've worked in several different restaurants. That's not the case. If you want to be a manager.
Yeah, sounds suspicious for real. Like, hardcore. Like, especially like Santa Barbara seems very odd. Like, you already live in LA. Like, if there was going to be a manager's training somewhere, like, I imagine it would be like a ball, like, they'd rent a ballroom of a hotel in Los Angeles to do it. Like, it's weird. Is the headquarters of Marie Callender's in Santa Barbara?
I wish.
I mean, and I'm not shading Marie Callender's. Look,
no.
Pot pie all day. Like,
right.
I'm into it. I'm just saying, like, I don't see that.
It doesn't
happening.
Add up. Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, this is in June of 2007. So it turns out what she's done, shocker of all shockers, is she has reconnected with her high school crush, John Gregory, and whisked off to a romantic weekend in wine country in Santa Barbara with him. John Gregory is, you know, single, kind of a player. He has no kids, no drama. That's his, like, MySpace persona. Like, he's
dude,
just
no drama, but you're going to go away on a weekend with a woman who's married and has kids. That seems like you're asking for drama, my guy.
Yeah.
That's like Days of Our Lives drama right there.
Exactly. And Neil, imagine, like, if you find out, like, you're under the kind of pressure you're under trying to take care of two toddlers, and you find out that your wife, like, fucked off to have a good time with someone else while you're, like, caring for two small children.
Yeah, and also, what's your fucking end game, Missy? Like, you're going to come back, and you're not the manager of Marie Callender's. You're still waiting tables. So like, how do you think that's going to play
out? She's like, I failed my manager's training.
Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't train well.
In Santa Barbara. So yeah, she comes back and like August 8th, 2007. So it's like a month later. Manling runs out of her house screaming for help. Neighbors are like trying to comfort her, saying like, what's wrong? One of her neighbors goes into her house, sees up at the top of the stairs a fucking crazy blood bath. Well, the first thing the neighbor says is like, oh my gosh, I didn't know her house was this messy.
Because
oh damn.
The police photos, it's insane. But then at the top of the stairs is Neil's body, blood everywhere. So they call the sheriffs. The sheriffs come. They're like, what the hell is going on? They take Manling. They take her into custody, first of all, because she's just shaking and screaming. And they get her story. She says that the night before, she got a phone call from a friend, and they went to TGI Fridays at around 10:30. They had some apps. They had some drinks. She gets home around 12:30 or so after stopping at the gas station for cigarettes. She wakes up at like 4:30 because she has insomnia. She gets into her car and drives to a nearby ridge to smoke cigarettes and watch the sunrise. She says she's been doing that a lot lately. And she's like, but I left the door unlocked. And she's like, okay. I go up to this ridge. She's like, I've been doing it a lot lately because I have to think, you know, blah, blah, blah. And when I came home, I saw this scene. So the
and all
are
of the
like,
detectives are like, uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
So the police and the coroner are looking at this scene. First of all, they see her computer open with a suicide note from Neil saying, like, I'm sorry, like, things just got, like, too bad. It's typed, of course, and it's like, I just couldn't handle it, blah, 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 like, so I killed the kids and killed myself. The kids were found tucked into their bunk beds. They had, the coroner says it looks like they've been suffocated, like with a pillow. They're just like all tucked in their SpongeBob. Aww. It's fucking horrific. So they're like, did he commit suicide? And then they took literally one look at his body. He has been hacked apart with one of his samurai swords.
That's not how you commit suicide.
Comes
that's not-
to find out he's had over 92 wounds over his body. So not a suicide. Like literally impossible. Missing limbs and shit. So they are literally immediately like, no. Okay, so it's either an intruder or Manling. It takes them all of 2 seconds to look in her car and find a pack of cigarettes with Neil's blood on them.
Okay.
Oh,
okay.
My God.
Okay. Like, she is not very smart.
No. So then they confront her with the cigarette box, and that's when she cracks.
Wow. That didn't take very much.
Here was her plan. She wanted to be free. She hated the life that she was living. And apparently, like, no other option, like divorce or just walking the fuck away was an option to her. So her plan was that she was going to smother the kids before she went out. She was counting on Neil to find them and be so distraught that he would kill himself.
That is a big what if.
Wow.
Like, what I don't understand. Okay. All right. That doesn't make sense to me.
So, yeah, they found on her computer that she logged out of MySpace that night. Like, she had been MySpace stalking John Gregory's page. like wrote the suicide note and then went upstairs to tuck the kids in. That's when she committed their murders. Said goodbye to Neil. I'm going to TGI Fridays. She did go to Fridays and did all that shit.
Can you? Oh my God. She, imagine damn. Being that friend who met her for happy hour. That. Like, and she's acting completely like normally, or at least not suspicious enough that it would, you know, rouse anything in you. Like, that is sociopathic. Like,
correct. That friend said nothing was wrong. They had some drinks and apps, and this fucking biatch had just murdered her babies. How fucking terrifying is that?
Like, I feel like I've got my chest feels heavy because like that is so fucking scary. That people like that just walk among us.
Sinister.
Mm-hmm. Ugh, monster. Yeah. Ugh.
It's like you were saying the other day, Cassie, when you're in the airport and you're like,
oh, that was me.
Or was it or you, Keegan? Yeah.
Yeah.
When you're like, how many people here have fucking killed somebody?
Yeah, look, that waitress just served somebody like a margarita who like had just murdered her kids. Like,
that's wild to me.
Yeah, it's unfathomable. So she got back and Neil had been playing like Call of Duty or something like that and had then just passed out. So he didn't like check on the boys. And honestly, they looked like they were sleeping. They were, you know, tucked in. It didn't look like anything was wrong. So even if he had checked in, you know, he may have just peeked his head in, been like, oh, they're both sleeping. And because they were in bunk beds.
Yeah. You're not going to go that much further. And you're not going to, as a parent, you're not going to, like, if you see kids in there and they are not awake and they're not disturbing anything, they're not being crazy, you're just like, yep, sleeping.
Right. Yep. Especially this guy who, you know, was doing so much on his own. He was probably like, as long as they're not making any noise, like, thank God I get like a moment to myself. Like, what a bad plan on her part.
And this episode in particular was so chilling because there were so many home movies of these little baby angels. It was really, really tough. But yeah, so then she gets back. She notices that Neil is just sleeping in bed. So she gets the heaviest samurai sword that he has and stands over him and plunges into his chest.
Mm-mm.
And Neil fucking fights like a madman. So she hadn't planned on that. She was trying to make it look like a suicide, but he was like, gonna fight back, gonna fight for his life. And it ended up, I mean, going all around the you know, second floor, whatever. She's chasing him and just hacking him samurai sword.
Oh my God.
That scene is bananas. It's crazy. And that's that, you know, they got the confession out of her. They charged her, you know, with the three murders. She is actually on death row in California.
Wow.
Which is one of if you're on death row in California, especially as a woman, like,
It's just horrific. It's horrific.
Wow.
And it's so stupid because they end up not on the show interviewing John Gregory. I found like a snippet of an article because there's not really a ton of information about this crime online. There's no real articles. They're, you know, not one of those good hometown, you know.
Yeah.
I think it's just because this case is just that fucking horrific it's just... It's so bad. But that guy was just like, yeah, we weren't dating. We reconnected on MySpace and like hooked up. But like, I don't understand. Yeah. He's like, she's like, I am traumatized because I did not think I led her on in any way to say like, oh, if you get divorced, I'll be with you or whatever. Like,
yeah. Talk about your worst date, huh?
Yeah. Manling Williams on death row in California, family annihilator.
Christina. And
the episode was such too that at the for like the first good bit of it, I was just like, that's why I asked the question. I'm like, who is it that's going to snap first? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Is it going to be him or her? Because it seemed like it was anybody's fucking guess.
100%. 100%. Wow. Well, that was a. I mean, good. Awful. I always feel weird being like, that was a good one, because it's yeah. so horrifying. But it's a story I'd never heard before. Wow. Right.
Yeah. American Ooh. Monster was actually something, too, I put on as a palate cleanser because I watched a couple episodes of Evil Lives Here, and that became too much. I saw the episode of the woman that was married to Peter Tobin, the guy. Oh, Google him. I don't want to get into it here because that you think this story I just shared was bad. Peter Tobin is horrific. That sounds familiar.
Me too.
He's the one in England that had all the little girls buried in his backyard.
Oh.
And his wife like had no idea. And so she's sharing like what it was like to be married to him. And I was like, I got the creepy crawlies. So then I put on this as a palate cleanser. And then I was like, I have to go outside and see sunshine now.
There's an episode of Who Did I Like Effing Marry?
Yes.
Where it's but I didn't say effing just because I didn't want to say fucking, like that's the name of the show. yeah. But it's like the Green River Killer's wife.
No
and
way.
It is, I feel so sad for this woman because she was so like genuinely in love with this person and like they were happy and she seemed like happy and like she, her affect is so flat because she completely cut him off. Like he still writes to her and she doesn't respond and like stuff. But it's like, can you imagine?
No. You would have such a difficult time trusting yourself. Again.
Yeah. Or anyone else. Like,
dude. Ugh. You guys both watch Night Stalker.
Right? Oh, yeah.
I started it. I have Dude. Not finished it yet, but it is so well,
well
done.
Well, this will not give anything away, but the fucking women who are like find like that go in and are like, oh, he's so hot.
Oh.
He's so, this motherfucker is the most disgusting piece mm-hmm. of shit mm-hmm. ever. And I'm like, I'm sorry, his fucking teeth are rotting out of his fucking skull.
Well, what is
and
that
you're
called?
Like,
Hybristophilia, isn't that what it is?
Oh my God, I just don't understand it.
I've never understood that either. Ugh. People that get obsessed and start writing people in prison. I know we talked about like, you know, something like that at the top where like people have to be, you know, that's another thing that I have never been able to understand.
It's the ultimate fix you, right? Like, you know, like it's the ultimate, like I can save you thing, right? Or this person's misunderstood, or I'm going to find the good in them and I'm going to bring it out. Like, I think that there is that kind of like savior's complex that some of these people have.
Is it there also like the idea though that do you think that because they're out of reach?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There's a safety in that.
Yeah, they can't like, leave you.
Can't
they can't
leave
cheat
me.
On you.
Right.
Yeah.
You can't leave me if I can't. You can't. I don't know.
They need Oof. You. Yeah.
I also thought that maybe part of it could be a self-esteem thing where it's like, oh, he did all this crazy stuff to other women, but like I'm above that. And mm-hmm. like, right. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's weird
so
and
weird.
Gross.
It's yeah. so weird. But yeah, what else have you guys been watching?
Yeah, I mean, the Night Stalker documentary, I finished that. We binged it last night. It was like
so good.
So good. Yeah, it Ugh. Was really, it is pretty graphic though. I was
yeah.
really, mm-hmm. really hard to watch in spots. But then also finished 30 Rock. So balancing out the yeah. darkness with the light, I'm like, just give me some Liz Lemon as a palate cleanser, please. So yeah, that's pretty much it. And then I finished The Five. Cannot recommend that book enough. It's so good. Really trying to locate Coven Garden Ladies, which is not on Kindle. So if anybody's got the 411 on where I can find it to read that one next, I really want to get into it.
Yeah, I'm telling you, try iBooks.
Okay. Yeah.
It might be on there. Sometimes that happens. I've run into that where like a book isn't available on Kindle or Kindle has an exclusive on a book that I can't get on iTunes. So sometimes that happens where they kind of have an exclusive for like a time period.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
When a book comes out.
I want to get it because Eric just got a book he's been really looking forward to. And I was like, oh my gosh, let's take our books to the beach you know, tomorrow and just be outside and read next to each other. So, yeah, I'd really like to locate it. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I also binged Night Stalker, as we know. So fucking good. Jesus, I high recommend. It's funny because I actually started it before Chris came home from work. And he's like, what are you watching? And I was like, he's like, oh, I wanted to watch that. And I was like, of course. I was like, the one thing.
That was the same thing. I had no idea. Like, Eric was like, oh, I really want to watch that. And I was like, really? You do? Like, I didn't think he would be into it. But then, oh my God, the detectives in that. The first time I saw the detective, Frank, he's like drinking the whiskey. Oh, yeah. I turned to Eric. I go, the whiskey makes the ghosts go away.
Those are the vibes you get from Frank Salerno, for real. Like, yes. Totally. Like, okay.
Yeah.
Dude, I had already seen like pretty much the first half of the first episode, but I was like, this is fine. I'll start it over. But when that girl, the young girl, the victim, girl, I was like, I can only have seen that one time. So I was like, I'm going to go make myself something to drink. You watch this part. And I'll come back.
What I'll say for people, like, if they have kind of the same mentality around it as I did at first, where I was like, you know what, I'm going to watch this, but also, like, I know everything about Richard Ramirez. Oh, like, I've seen everything.
No idea.
Right? And so I was like, there's not going to be stuff in this documentary that is surprising to me because I know this story front ways and back ways. I was wrong. So if that's how you feel about it, if you're like a true crime person who feels like, you know, like I always think of that scene in Parks and Rec where Ron Swanson's in the hardware store and they're like, can we help you? And he's like, son, I know more than you. That's how I feel about true crime. I was wrong. You should watch it.
No idea about the kid aspect of it. I had no idea. And then when Diane Feinstein, oh my God, I was screaming at the TV about her.
When they called it, Chris and I, when they were like the kiddie stuff, I was like, I looked at Chris and I was like, he's like, I don't like that. I was like, I don't like that either. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, I don't like the terminology kiddie stuff. It feels very diminished.
Yeah, trivializing.
In my eyes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it does. And I mean, that's just a minor picket part. But the other thing that I watch, which has been on my radar for a while, but Christina had highly recommended because she's seen it, was Promising Young Female.
Woman.
Promising Young Woman. Yes.
Oh, woman. I'm sorry. Yeah. Oh, my fucking God.
I know.
You must fucking watch this movie immediately, if not sooner. I could literally, you said you've seen it twice. I can see how I could absolutely watch it again. 100%. It will make you want to break everything because it'll piss you the fuck off. Mm-hmm. Keegan, I actually want to watch you watch it because you're...
Well, you see,
anger.
You see, but I thought about watching it. I thought about watching it last night, but I have been in a depression spiral. There's a lot of in my world right now, there's a lot of crying in the shower energy. There's a lot of looking at the ceiling with headphones on, listening to Phoebe Bridgers energy in my world right now. And so I was just like, I don't know if I'm in a place where I can watch this movie. Without wanting to destroy my living room. So I really want to see it. Like, it's like absolutely number one on my list because, first of all, you two recommend it so highly. And we have been wanting to watch it since we saw the trailer like last year. You know, so for sure, I'm going to watch it 100%.
Mm-hmm. It's so beautifully shot. And Carey Mulligan is so good. Is so good and
phenomenal.
It's so well written. I had no idea that it was the woman that played Camilla in The Crown.
I love her.
That wrote it. I'm obsessed now. The whole aesthetic of the movie is incredible. Like I can't praise that movie enough. And it's a powerful, powerful message. So yeah. I'm so glad you loved it.
Of course, throughout the movie, I want to set the whole place on fire because, I mean, there's just so many times when the guys are like, you're just ruining this for, I'm like, Like, I just want to burn everything to the ground. And then, but then you have like, oh God, it is threaded together in such a beautiful way. Beautiful is not the word. It's just so well put together.
Yeah.
It's hard to explain.
It's a very, very well done movie, like across the board. And I wish that more movies were like that. It's been a while since a movie's really reached me that powerfully. Like I'm used to the blockbusters and all that stuff, which is not to say that those aren't enjoyable, but to watch a film that really like tightly resonates, gets you like that. Because I usually get that feeling from a long drawn out series, but it's a testament to her craft that she put this together, that you're able to be affected that powerfully in 90 minutes.
Carrie Mulligan is like phenomenal. I've never seen something with her in it that where she wasn't phenomenal. She's an incredible artist, like, you know, she's amazing. So I am really looking forward to watching that. But in my world right now, I'm back on the Housewives game. Okay.
Good. Good.
Because even brain though candy. It's brain candy, like, even though it's reality TV, there is something so divorced from reality, like watching these like women in their 30s and 40s carry around like $400,000 bags and like just yell at each other for an hour that I'm like, okay, you know, I can have it on. The other thing that I've been watching to get back to my YouTube recommendations the series of YouTube recommendations that I've had on the show, I have been watching the YouTube channel Observe, which is basically just a body language analyst watching people. Like, he's been doing a lot of true crime, so he'll watch like interrogations and then pause the video and be like, this thing means this thing or could mean this thing. And I realize, like, he even says he's like, you know, it's not a exact science and all of that stuff, but there is something so interesting in watching somebody who like has expertise in nonverbal communication kind of like show you things. And the true crime ones are very interesting. It's just Observe is the channel name.
Okay. I'm looking it up right now and following, because that sounds fucking fascinating.
I haven't. I was watching the Amanda Knox one earlier today. And then he has one that I haven't watched because it's pretty long, where he looks at the like JonBenet Ramsey's parents in interviews.
I want to see that.
And things like that. So he did Scott Peterson, like, and I watched that too. So
nice.
Yeah.
I would also like him to do a series of when he just goes to restaurants and watches couples and like figure 100 shit out.
Like, this guy's married and I'm like, I can't imagine being married to this person, because like everything you do, he would be like, you just had like a contempt grimace on your face. What did you really mean by that? You know, like any little thing. I watched him analyze, the first one I actually watched was when I was coming out of my crown phase, and I watched him analyze the engagement of Prince Charles and Princess Diana and like the first interview they gave. And he's like, how did anyone think these two people were in love? Like, everything about their body language is like, they don't even like each other, like, let alone want to be getting married, you know?
Well, yeah, they'd only like really been in person 3 times, and then they hadn't even been alone at all. Yeah. Oh,
and they're
my
like,
gosh,
we're
that's
overjoyed.
So cool.
And he's like, I don't think they're overjoyed.
That's not what joy looks like. You might show a show you might like, Keegan, is a show called Lie to Me.
Yeah, he talks about Lie to Me a little bit on the show YouTube channel. I would watch that for sure.
Yeah, it's on Hulu. I used to watch it. I liked it. I liked that guy, Tim Roth, that actor.
Mm-hmm, me too.
Well, cool. Well, hey, if you guys have any shows or books that you want to recommend, if you have stories to tell, if you just want to reach out and say hello, go to our one-stop shop of a website. It's myworstatepodcast.com. And we love you so much.
Cheers.